and you are listening to member-supported Red River Radio, a public radio service of LSUS. You're tuned to KDAQ, Shreveport, Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria, Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, Magnolia, and KLDN, Lufkin, Nacogdoches. You can find us online at redriverradio.org. And obviously, today is not Cyber Day. What it is time for is another spotlight here on Red River Radio. So, very good morning to you. I've put away that leftover. Now we got some new stuff to talk about here, which is going to be great. Joining me in the studio, as he has many, many times, of course, Michael Butterman, music director of the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra. And also joining me in the studio, the Anderson and Rowe piano duo. That's Greg Anderson and Elizabeth Joy Rowe, who will be hearing in a few minutes or so. But Greg, Elizabeth, welcome.
Thanks for having us, yeah. Kermit.
Glad to have you here. Michael, welcome back. I know you've been traveling.
I have indeed. Good to be back in Shreveport.
And we've got an interesting mix of pieces on the concert. That is tomorrow evening, 7:30 p.m., of course, at the Riverview Theater, a program that features four different composers. Sunday, there's going to be a chamber concert. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But why don't you do the introduction to the program?
Sure. Well, we have two works that feature piano, one of them featuring two pianos, which is an unusual aspect for an orchestral concert. We are playing the Poulenc double concerto, so you will see, of course, two 9-foot pianos on stage. This work is, I can let Liz and Greg talk about it as well, but it's a, I think, very witty work, also very beautiful, especially the second movement. It's got just a lot of very audience-friendly aspects to it, and one of the, along with the Mozart double concerto, the one of the two best known works for two pianos and orchestra. And then we're doing undoubtedly one of the best known works for solo piano and orchestra, the Rhapsody on a theme of Paganini by Rachmaninoff, that Elizabeth will be playing with the orchestra. In addition to that, of course, we have two works for just the orchestra alone. Mm-hmm. Since the Rachmaninoff is a work based on that of an earlier Italian composer in Paganini, I thought we could do another work by a Russian composer based on an earlier Italian composer.
Good thinking.
If you're following that. And that is to say the Pulcinella Suite. This is a ballet that Stravinsky wrote in the neoclassical style based on music by Pergolesi, an early classical period Italian composer, and one that has a very, I think, again, it's very witty and also lively and audience friendly for sure.
Well, yeah, you were saying the Rachmaninoff is so familiar, but certainly the Stravinsky, this particular piece, maybe this along with Firebird, are probably its two most familiar pieces.
To a general audience, probably so.
To a general audience,
yeah. I think that's right, and with good reason. And then we're opening the concert with a work by Mason Bates, a young American composer who is really everywhere these days. He was the composer in residence for the Chicago Symphony for the last couple of seasons, and now with the Kennedy Center. But he specializes in, well, a lot of things, but one of his calling cards is working in modern technology, use of laptop, sampling different sounds, layering them, lapping them on top of one another. And so this work is called Rusty Air in Carolina. It depicts a summer evening in North Carolina, and there are sounds of katydids and crickets, and some of those then get kind of picked up, sampled, and turned into a beat,
like a percussion track, for
house music or something like this, basically. And the orchestra participates in that along with this music that is sort of nature music that has been transformed. It's very, very interesting, and it's both atmospheric and also, I think, just funky. If orchestra music can be said to ever be funky, this is it.
That's a good description, especially when the beat gets going on, partway through. And I was thinking that it's kind of a natural progression from the orchestra did Pines of Rome in
that's
April.
Right. That's
another
right.
piece that for its time, I mean, having a recording of the Nightingale was state of the art technology.
It
not
was
old,
in 19 whatever. Yes, right.
So if you can imagine that with all of these sounds, and it's a pretty dense electronic track with all of these coming in, and they're timed to different places in the music.
Right. So there's an operator, a laptop operator in the back of the percussion section who is looking at a score and has to hit these various cues at exactly the right moment, because we are all of us listening to this track and at many times locking into it rhythmically and so on. So it's being played in a way just like any other instrument in the orchestra.
So it's a fascinating piece, and as you said, very accessible. And,
for sure.
I think it's going to be a great concert opener. Greg, Elizabeth, you want to talk a little bit about the Poulenc?
Sure, it's a piece we love to perform. It's, as the maestro was commenting, very witty. Especially the last movement, I feel like I'm walking through Paris in the middle of the night, and I turn a corner, and suddenly I'm in a music hall, and I turn another corner, and suddenly I'm in a burlesque hall or a romantic scene with a lover. I mean, it's just every second we've got something new. There's children's songs. It's just so playful, and so it's really fun for the two of us to be able to interact with this mercurial kind of changing piece of music.
Yeah, it has that signature for Poulenc combination of a cosmopolitan suavity with a multicultural element. There are the sounds of the Balinese gamelan that he's incorporated throughout the piece, and that kind of gives it this compelling sonic edge. But we just love it because it constantly surprises us, even though it's such a staple in our repertoire and of the piano duo repertoire in general. It never fails to delight us as players, and we hope the audience will feel the same.
Well, duo pianists, not something that we have much of an opportunity to hear quite frequently. And of course, as Michael was saying, you know, there are a couple of pieces that are really, you know, the best known in the repertoire, but there's a lot of music, and I know that you guys do a lot also just on your own without orchestra. And since we have our performance studio available, and since you're willing, I know you're going to play something for us here, a couple pieces, but what's the first thing that you're going to play?
We're going to play for you right now on a single piano. On tomorrow's concert, we'll be on two separate pianos, but sometimes we combine on one piano. And so when we do that, we like to find ways to justify us taking the time to squish in such a compact way on the 88 keys. And so we end up playing a lot of our own arrangements when we do that. Right now, we're going to perform a dance, and we've physically written it in such a way that it feels like our four hands are physically dancing with one another over the keys, and we actually follow examples of choreography for feet and try and reproduce it with our hands. So you won't be able to see that now. You can watch some of our music videos online, but we will be playing some of these dances on Sunday's concert. But right now we're going to perform a tango.
Yes, this is our arrangement of the Liber Tango by Astor Piazzolla, and in creating this arrangement, we wanted to, as Greg mentioned, recreate the tango choreography, but with our hands. You don't want to see us dance it with our feet, so we're doing it with our hands. But we also, which people on the radio, you should be able to enjoy. We wanted to also incorporate the sounds of a tango band in the arrangement, and most importantly, we wanted to capture the spicy spirit of the tango.
Oh, I like that. Well, why don't you guys go ahead and get ready there, and Michael and I will cover for you while you maneuver yourselves, and I'll give you a signal. But,
well, they were saying that, you know, unfortunately, listening on the radio, you won't be able to see some of the visual aspects of what they do. But this is, they made a video of this particular piece. I think it may have been one of the very first ones that they did. So I would hardly encourage listeners to check out their YouTube channel, for example, to see in action.
To see, this, to see this very in piece. Action. Okay, well, I think they're just about ready, so... Wow, what fun. Unmistakably music of Piazzolla. That's great. Duo pianists Anderson and Rowe performing live in the Red River Radio studios here at the Weiss Performance Studio. They're making their way back. Yeah, let's give some more. Michael and I did applause. That piece looks like a blast. And Michael, you were saying, you know, that someone really should watch the video, and it's true, because you're starting the very piece, and I haven't heard you do it, but you're leaning over the piano. I'm going, okay, is she not going to sit down?
Yeah, we both take turns kind of exploring the nether regions of the instrument.
Which is
as appropriate for a piece like that.
Very risque.
Well, it works great. So is that your transcription?
Yeah.
Is, which is tremendous, and hearing that the piano can create an entire rhythm section aside from just that. Well, that's exciting stuff. Thank you for doing that, and we'll get back to having you play a little something more here a little bit later on. I'm kind of overwhelmed with thinking that one, Michael.
I have a segue, perhaps, I think as young classical musicians in particular, people in conservatories are these days, especially being challenged with the idea that it's not enough to be able to play your excerpts perfectly and to go out into the competition circuit and do well and so on, and then just play your Beethoven sonatas and people will flock to you because it's worth hearing. Of course, it is worth hearing, but there's no question that these days people have to create their own opportunities. They have to be ambassadors for this art form that all of us love so much, and I think Greg and Liz are great examples of how you do just that. There obviously have been piano duos for a long time, but to kind of reinvent the genre, as I think the two of you have done, is really special. And they've done it through creating arrangements and expanding the repertoire for this collaborative pairing, and also I think by reaching into what is now an important and new technology, which is video content related to social media and so on. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, first of all, that's such a compliment coming from another true and powerful champion for our art form, and it really means a lot to us. But the driving force for everything that we create is our mission, and that is to make classical music a powerful and relevant force in society. So that affects everything we program, everything we arrange, and the way that we present our music, not only on the concert stage, but in other forms of media. We make a lot of music videos. We have nearly 50 at this point, and we found that has been an incredible way to connect with audience members across the world. And one of the things that we love about it is that it gives another access point to classical music, that it doesn't have to be purely an auditory art form, but that you can glean really fascinating visual connections with the music that you're listening to. And we live in such a visual culture anyway, and it's really opened up so much creativity for ourselves, and it helps us to approach the music that we perform with a reinvigorated spirit.
We've had so much fun, making those music videos. And initially we started making them because we wanted to post things on YouTube, but the audio quality on YouTube was subpar, and the comments were kind of distracting, as were the advertisements. And so we thought we needed something that could really withstand the rigors of this YouTube environment. But then we've just kind of gotten carried away with them and have so much fun with them on their own right. We actually, we're talking about thinking ahead and trying to be progressive. And in many, many ways, we actually are so inspired by our past. And the performances of Liszt or Thalberg back in the 1800s. And those performers would be performing new works on every concert. They would be performing pieces inspired by house music, much like Mason Bates's piece. Or not house music, but dance music of the time. And they would be playing pieces based on the movie hits of the day, the operas. Mm-hmm. The popular tunes that everyone loved. And then the performers would be taking requests from the audience and improvising upon them. They'd be talking with the audience. They'd be making jokes all throughout. And there was this informality even to the concert programs, even though they were really hitting upon some of the more profound concepts of life. And so it was like this impressive juggling act that these performers would do that have been so inspiring to us, and we really reap a lot of ideas from what they did, yeah, actually almost 200 years ago.
When did you two discover that you really both had this love for approaching music like this?
Well, we started playing together 14 years ago. Okay. But before that, we had already developed a friendship. We were classmates at Juilliard. And at the foundation of our duo is this strong friendship. And I think from the beginning of our interaction, we always shared a lot of our ideas about music, and we respected each other as solo pianists. And so it was just this organic unfolding and truly serendipity, because neither of us had been attracted to the piano duo genre per se. And it was literally because of our unique alchemy that something like this has emerged. And so I would say that our duo partnership has lasted this long because of our strong personal connection, but also because we have this shared ethos.
Yeah, I remember when I was really young, my mom took me to see a Mozart opera, and it was one of the most exciting things I'd ever seen in my life. And the content matter was so scandalous, it was Così fan tutti, that my mom took me home at intermission. And I remember just being horrified, because it was just like elation, pure elation. And then as I started to become more of a professional musician and practice more, and went to music conservatory and just was really trained in the art of fine, refined performance, I started to listen to how beautifully done the two-note slurs were, the quality of tone, and I forgot that like essential quality that made the music so joyous to me when I was 8 years old. And so it was around that time that I met Liz, and I remember struggling to find a way to reconnect with the childhood simplicity and joy that was inherent in the music. And so the two of us did have many discussions about how one could do that. How could we write versus left brain listening? How can we just feel like the act of music listening is not a chore or boring or stodgy, but like a relevant and powerful part of our lives? Like at some points it has been. How can we do that so it's always like that? And so that's a huge formation of our duo.
Well, there's no question that joy really comes out in your playing.
Well, thank
together
you.
Just watching you and hearing you. So I mean it's pretty clear.
I think luckily we found a kindred spirit in this quest for joy, and that sometimes it's missing when you go to a classical concert. You just feel a little straitjacketed, and so much of the music emerged from these colorful personalities. And what makes music so powerful to us, music in any genre, is that it's so inextricably linked to the human experience, that it reflects what it means to be alive, what it means to be human. And I personally am sort of a closet rocker, so I grew up listening to the Beatles, so that also has informed me very, very heavily.
We do all kinds of music. That's all right. That's fine. Talk a little bit about, since I'm going to make you run into the other room here in a little while, the program on Sunday.
Yeah, that one's going to be a very different departure from Saturday's concert, because there'll be no orchestra anymore. We're going to play some pieces on two pianos, some pieces on a single piano. And it doesn't matter which side of the audience you sit on, because we'll play some forehand pieces on each piano. And so theoretically, everyone should get a showing of kind of the surprises that happen when we join forces.
Mm-hmm. And the concert is a condensed version of our typical recitals, which typically feature a vast variety of not only musical styles, but moods. Mm-hmm. We start with this wonderful ebullient piece by Busoni based on a Mozart piano concerto finale. So it's the F major piano concerto final movement, and it's just, we think, the musical encapsulation of laughter. And then we move on to one of the seminal works of the duo repertoire, which is also a nice nod to the Rachmaninoff Paganini variations, in that it's a work by Rachmaninoff, but an early work, his Fantasy Tableau for two pianos, and it's gorgeous and super evocative and poetic.
And romantic. And then we're going to play, we just played a tango for you all now, but we're going to do three of our tango arrangements following the Rachmaninoff suite. And we're going to end, Liz mentioned she is a diehard Beatles fan. We're actually going to end with the Beatles. We're going to play a very, very overwhelmingly gospel-infused performance of Let It Be, a brand new arrangement. Cover, I guess you could call it, that we've created, which just features us going to town almost an avant-garde way. There's a lot of surprises in it, and something we're looking forward to.
So that's going to be 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon, and that's going to be in the Anderson Auditorium at the Hurley School of Music, Centenary College. And that is a free concert, so being sponsored by the Knoll Foundation. So that's Sunday afternoon. Of course, tomorrow, something very different, but featuring that is the concert at Riverview Theater with the Shreveport Symphony, and Michael, of course, conducting. And we've talked about the Poulenc and the Rachmaninoff and the Bates. You mentioned the piece that has a little bit of electronica in there, the Rusty Air in Carolina, and of course the Stravinsky Pulcinella Suite. I don't know, maybe just say a little bit more about that. It's a familiar piece, but I don't know that everybody knows the whole story of the ballet or anything.
Well, I don't know that you need to excuse me, know the story necessarily. This is, talking just for a moment stylistically. When you hear the name Stravinsky, if you think of anything, you might think of something with a huge orchestra and very aggressive, and you might think of Moments of Rite of Spring that you might know, or the finale from Firebird, which is quite well known. But this is, Stravinsky had different periods of composition that we like to describe, and this is from his neoclassical period, where he sort of pared down. A lot of it had to do with, frankly, the resources that were available starting during World War I and extending for a little while after that. So he wrote for smaller ensembles, and also essentially took music that existed before a lot of times and viewed it through his own prism. So there are very, very sort of identifiable melody and accompaniment textures. There are what we call antecedent and consequent phrase pairs, very, 4+4 bars sorts of structures. But there's also these little very tart Stravinskian harmonies and touches of orchestration that really would never have been thought of or conceived of by a composer living in the 1700s. It had to be something through Stravinsky's ear and genius. So it's just a work that has a lot of short movements, maybe 8, if I'm not mistaken, 8 plus a finale, that lasts 21, 22 minutes, something like this. Sometimes done, you can see it in the full ballet, but more often done just as a concert suite, I think.
Sure.
It's also, there's a version for violin solo.
Yes,
piano.
Sweet Italian.
Yeah. And then maybe you should do it.
I've heard of the cello one, too. And we've actually contemplated creating a two-piano version of it.
It's got to be on the list. Here you go.
Well, if you can do it by Sunday.
Ah!
I'm just saying.
All right. Quick. Gets the piano.
Greg and Elizabeth, you're going to play another piece for us here, so this might be a good time to do that. I won't make you rush back in afterwards, because we'll certainly acknowledge you afterwards, and Michael and I will wrap it up. But what are you going to play next for us?
Well, this is our arrangement based on the classic song What a Wonderful World, made famous by Louis Armstrong. And again, we like taking classic works from many different genres and reimagining them. And it actually reminds me that both programs are tied together by this idea of reimagination and appropriation. I mean, yep. Every piece.
Poulenc is taking Mozart.
Yeah.
We got Pergolesi and the Stravinsky, and of course Paganini and the Rachmaninoff.
Yeah, right. And then all of our arrangements. But what we love about this piece, about What a Wonderful World, is that it literally celebrates how we feel to be musicians and to be here in Shreveport, and every time to have an audience that listens to what we do. It really reminds us of the beauty that exists in the world around us.
Yeah, and just incidentally, talking about Rachmaninoff, we have appropriated a song by Rachmaninoff about the beauty of the world. It's a song called Lilacs, and kind of fused it with this cover of the famous standard, American standard. So we got a mashup of influences going on.
All right. Okay. Well, you guys go ahead and back into the performance studio, and we'll be waiting for you to get ready. And Michael, I'm just thinking here. This is, we think in terms of classical concerts and music that's very old, but nothing on the program tomorrow is more than 100 years old, really. I mean, it's less, in fact, significantly. The Poulenc's from the 30s. I don't know the
right.
Rachmaninoff is.
Oh, it was one of his later works.
Later works, yes.
Yeah, so this is everything post-1930 for sure.
Yeah.
And yet, very, very...
we all know it.
Very, very accessible indeed.
So they're getting themselves set up there. Oh, they look like they're ready. Okay, here we go. Thank you. it was beautiful. Duo pianists Anderson and Rowe playing their own transcription of What a Wonderful World live in the Red River Radio Performance Studio, the Weiss Performance Studio. They're joining us today with performances over the next couple of days for the Shreveport Symphony. Michael Butterman also in the studio, and they made their way back in here after all. That was absolutely beautiful. That's a great great arrangement,
for sure.
Transcription, what do you want to call it? But it's I love it. Very virtuostic, too. And all that subtlety. And so, I can hear that. Michael, well, this has been one of our longer spotlights as I'm looking here, which is great. This is absolutely terrific. But just to kind of wrap it up, any other thoughts you might have about the weekend?
Well, just to say, I'm looking very much forward to it. I had the privilege of working with Greg and Liz a couple weeks ago in Colorado, and just was extremely excited, in particular that we have this opportunity on Sunday to hear them. So we're going to, mentioned that they, do a lot of recital work, obviously, but perhaps, I don't know, is this that common to do both a recital and an orchestral appearance in the the same weekend in the same city? I don't know if it is or not, but
it occurs sometimes, but it's less often. Yeah,
this is a very jam-packed weekend.
Yes,
there we go, and one that I think our audiences are going to really, really enjoy.
Sure.
So I certainly hope people can make it to both of those events, because they're really complimentary, but they're very, very different as well.
Yes, indeed. And of course, Sunday's concert is free. Tomorrow's concert, if you want tickets and more information, just maybe also to read about our guest artists, go to ShreveportSymphony.com, and you'll find a link there right on the front page of the website. Of course, you can always call also 318-227-8863, and that aligns as TUNE on your phone if you still have letters on your phone dial. So the tune line, 227-TUNE. Michael, Greg, Elizabeth, I want to thank you all so much for being here.
A pleasure. Thank you.
It's been a great spotlight. And if you're with an organization and you have an event coming up, you'd like to be featured on a future spotlight, just give us a call at 800-552-8502.